This is Tim Murdoch. You guys are watching In-Game Exotica, exclusive interview series to White Rabbit Radio. And today we have on a first-time guest from Australia, a friend of Joel Davis and Tom Sewell. He's in the same particular group over there, Mr. Jacob Hersant. Maybe you've seen his videos all over the interwebs. How are you doing today, Jacob?
I'm doing well. It's early in the morning here in Australia, in Melbourne specifically. Went for a walk just before I got on this call. Saw some diversity. Day ruined already.
You saw some diversity. How early is it in Melbourne?
Pardon?
How early is it over there right now? Because we just had daylight savings time, so our time messes up the rest of the planets when we do that.
It's about to turn 10 a.m.
Oh, okay. It's not that. It's not like 5 a.m. or anything like that.
Nah, I would have pushed back the time if it was that case. I don't like getting up too early for a call because I find I'm not very articulate if I've had hardly any sleep trying to get on the call and then be profound.
Yeah, we want profound, that's for sure. So when did you get started with the NSN over there in that particular group? How long have you known Joel and Tom and all those guys and Blair?
Well, I've known Blair and Tom the longest. I've known them since they were doing the UPF, the United Patriots Front group, which was focused around anti-Islam and street rallies. But in regards to National Socialist Network, I've been involved with that since it was founded, considering I was the founder. And I did that with Thomas and a bunch of other people that were in the group, another group now, a bit more obscure movement history in Australia, but a group called Lad Society. So they helped me out with founding it. And originally it was primarily just me getting photos taken of me in black with my girlfriend, writing up little posts. It was more or less just an art blog. It wasn't the foremost group in Australia at that time, but through hard work and through just, yeah, I guess hard work. Hard work's the only way to say it, I guess. We've managed to become a big name in Australian politics.
Yeah, when was the first time you attended a rally of any kind? How many years ago? For nationalism.
I think the first time I attended a rally would have been probably 2016, and it would have been one of the UPF rallies or one of the TBC rallies, another group, TBC, called True Blue Crew, which was basically adjacent to UPF, so it was a patriotic anti-Islam group. And I was there, not much happened. I think it was a flag march or something, so there was Antifa there to protest us. And we went for a walk with Australian flags, yelling, Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. It was that kind of thing.
All right, so you've been here almost a decade, give or take. And how fast did you know? It was almost instantaneous that you said, well, I'm going to be in this. This is my
yes,
ticket.
I found the way that I was convinced was through internet propaganda. So I came across Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told by Dennis Wise. I watched that. That basically opened up my mind to the possibility of becoming far right. And so I went and delved further into it, consuming other content, whether it be Iron March, TRS, just going on 4chan, seeing what they're saying, you know, 4chan poll. This was back before poll was actually just really, really bad. Now, anytime I go on 4chan, it's just completely, it just feels like it's just inundated with like state actors that are just like there to basically ruin the platform. But back then there was actually still some decent conversation on there.
Okay, so poll, the whole entire alt-right growth in America, that had an influence, and then you started getting, did you start getting involved almost immediately, or like joining a group? Did you join up a group like immediately? From the sounds of it, you did.
Yeah, so I got involved in real life almost instantaneously because I thought there's no point of being far right unless you're actually going to do something with it. Just sitting there and consuming the content and getting mad and getting upset about all the problems in society. You don't even really have the right to get upset about it unless you're going to try to change it, because the reason we're in this position is obviously apathy and inaction of the decent people in society. And to basically remain inactive is just to be indecent. Like, the reality is we have a responsibility to our people, to our ancestors, to our posterity, to create the best world that we can. And so I got involved originally with people off Iron March. So there was a bunch of Australians on Iron March. I went and met up with them, and I met up with some of the TRS people as well. I think that's when they were doing pool parties or whatever it is, which is, I think, just a euphemism for a political meeting. I don't know if people were actually doing pool parties, but our party was it wasn't a party. It was just a meeting in a pub, where I met two other guys. And then I ended up meeting people from Iron March, and from there, I was meeting other people as well, because those people had connections with the broader nationalist scene.
Gotcha. Intriguing. And so you saw early on, because I remember Blair Cottrell, the state came down on him. He was one of the first Australians that I'd really noticed. And there had been others, but he really was sticking his neck out, and the state came down on him pretty good at the time. I don't. It goes so far back, I don't even remember the years. But did that any of that stuff have an influence on you?
Ideologically, the patriotic stuff didn't have much of a an influence on me. I've never really been a kind of how would you describe it? A plastic patriot that is happy with all this diversity and all that stuff, except for Islam and being upset. Now, to be fair to Blair Cottrell, obviously he's not that either. He was trying to use that as a vector to bring back Australian racial nationalism.
Right.
But in terms of the propaganda, when they're talking about the Islam is not so nice to women and gays and things like that, that never really appealed to me. I've always been attracted to radicalism, and actually getting to the root of the problems and having a total social and political solution to everything. It doesn't really make sense to attack the symptoms rather than the root cause of things. So I was always more predisposed towards national socialism, and just outright fascism.
Well, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. It shows up in your work. Let's do this. Let's skip. I noticed you put up a video. I'm pretty sure it was you. It's from Australia. Let me show the video of your particular active group over there. I'm pretty sure it is directly related to your group. You can see this. Let's play a few seconds of it, and then we'll talk about it. Now over here, is this your group in particular or your particular branch?
So it's not my particular branch. I'm in Melbourne, Victoria, and that is New South Wales.
Gotcha.
Sydney, New South Wales. But yeah, they are the same movement. That's primarily focused on the weightlifting and the boxing and the running and the physical side, the physical training. So that's more Thomas Sewell's specialty. I'm more interested in activism, and that's what I was primarily focused on when I founded National Socialist Network. So stickers and all those kind of things, promoting our message. Also, we had the plans to do demonstrations, but we didn't have the numbers at that time. And as soon as we recruited enough numbers, we were out on the streets, obviously putting out the message that way. But Tom's obviously a former, he's a veteran. He was a competitive weightlifter, so he's very knowledgeable and fit, knowledgeable about gym, about boxing and all that kind of stuff. So he made it so basically our meetings are focused around physical training. So everyone meets up and you get the benefits of everyone linking together, networking, building bonds. But also we're there doing something productive, which is obviously physical training, keeping healthy, making sure that we're living as healthily as possible.
Since you do a lot of videos, propaganda, if you will, how important is it for Australian recruiting these types of videos? I found with Patriot Front over here and some of the different groups like Patriot Front, these particular, let's call it fitness club, fight club videos, definitely help the recruiting effort. I would imagine it's the same over there.
Yeah, any type of internet content is the way we get most of our recruiting, whether it be ideological podcasts and things like that, my little ideological videos, the training videos, obviously, some people are drawn to that. They're drawn to martial arts and sports and all those kind of things. And the thing that probably gets us the most recruiting because it gets us the most eyes is high, activism, high stakes kind of demonstrations like Australia Day, the Australia Day ones where there's massive conflict with the police harassing us, Antifa showing up, everyone. There's just a massive spectacle that gets us lots of views and lots of recruitment.
A lot of people hate the police over there, eh?
I think it's more or less everyone hates the police over the West, all over the Western world now,
Yeah.
because of the way that they've been acting. I think COVID was really the straw that broke the camel's back, and now police morale, public trust in the police is lower than it's ever been, which I'm very glad about because previously you'd have people like Baked Alaska singing, "We love our cops, we love our military, our law enforcement." Obviously, that's just a silly example, but on the right wing, people respected the cops, probably mostly because of their temperament and just their trust of authority, abstractly. It doesn't mean they particularly like the government, but they still think that they're have a responsibility to respect whatever authority there is, but that's no longer the case. Basically, everyone hates the police now, which is good. Maybe the only people that don't hate the police are like centrists that really don't have any views other than what the government say. So that's probably the only people that care. But people on the right, even just the conservative right, hate the police now because of, well, in America, you would have obviously COVID, have how the police acted during January 6th and the courts and all this stuff, what's been happening to Trump, all this. It's basically just destroyed trust in that institution.
No, I agree with that 100%. COVID was definitely an eye-opener for many. And some people don't seem to have recovered. They're still wearing masks and stuff like that. So it really put a divide in the society as well. I'm sure you see that in Australia. People that are going to be with the system and people that are going to be against the system.
Well, I haven't seen anyone specifically wearing masks still in Melbourne. I feel like we got hammered so bad with it and we were under lockdown for so long. I haven't seen anyone wear a COVID mask
That's good.
since COVID.
Over here in the grocery stores, you'll see them, and not a lot, but you do see them. Every time you go to the grocery store, you'll see someone with a mask on, which is sad.
Before COVID even happened, the only time I saw people wearing those masks were Asians.
Right.
And Asians would, I think it's like part of their culture that they wear those masks when they're sick,
Right.
just not infect other people.
Yeah, that's you still see them over here, though. still see him over here, which is very it's sad, but you know, like I'm thinking of the woman, a couple of women that work at the grocery store always have them on, and they're not sick. They just think that somehow they're going to help them or whatever. Yeah, the mastards, as they call them, are still around. So moving on, you have your new organization. You have a tremendous amount of activism. Most of the people listening are going to be aware, if not all, aware of the activism you've been up to, your group has been up to. And then the police started cracking down. And I know you've been involved in some court cases. How are those progressing?
Well, I only have one court case now, which is actually quite nice. Normally, I have a bunch of them. It does get tiring, but right now it's an appeal. So I was convicted in the magistrate's court of giving a Nazi salute. And I don't know, most people probably have seen the video of me outside of the county court where I go to throw a Roman, stop myself at the last moment while saying Heil Hitler and then saying, oops, nearly did it. Walking off. But a magistrate, well, the prosecution argued and the magistrate agreed with the fact that that's a proper, it's not a, it wasn't a strict proper Roman salute, but it was so close as to be able to be mistaken for it. So I was convicted on that basis. And I was sentenced to 1 month in prison. I didn't serve that. I was in for like an hour or two before my lawyer applied for bail. I was given bail with good conditions anyway. Like the only condition really is just not to leave Australia, which I didn't have any plans to leave Australia. Normally, these magistrates and the prosecution love to give like ridiculous bail conditions that basically take away your rights of association of expression. Previously, when I had bail conditions for charges of armed robbery, which sounds a lot cooler than I actually am. I haven't committed any armed robberies, but I was charged with it nonetheless. I was given bail conditions where I couldn't post anything on the internet and I couldn't associate with anyone that was far right. It wasn't even just NSN and EAM, it was anyone on the far right I couldn't associate with. So, and yeah, so now, 1 month in prison isn't a big deal, but we're appealing it so that we can get the law changed if we get high enough to the High Court, which we plan to go to. So yeah, if I had to do the 1 month, that wouldn't be a biggie. I think the worst part of prison is either it's a very long time or it would be not knowing when you're going to get out. I think those are the two main stresses. So I think a month, just a limit of 1 month, I don't think that's too hard of a jail sentence for anyone. So I'd happily do it, but probably won't have to if these laws get changed. Or my lawyer isn't only appealing the sentence. Sorry, the judgment, but also the sentence. So maybe they'll change the sentence but uphold the judgment. Who knows?
How many times have you been charged over your activism? Charged with a crime?
I've been charged with bill postering in one incident, which actually it wasn't bill postering. I think it was burglary. So I think I got charged with burglary, which this sounds like armed robbery now. Me just saying this makes it sound like I'm an actual criminal, been going and stealing things. But burglary is basically, in Australia, it's not only like breaking into someone's house and stealing stuff. Burglary can also be like being somewhere, basically trespassing while doing criminal damage. So
Interesting.
the circumstances were I was putting up some posters in a high school. This is when I was young and trying to recruit for an organization. So I was doing that, got arrested, and they charged me with burglary. The charges got downgraded to bill postering because yeah, burglary is a bit ridiculous for putting up some posters in a what do you call it? A school that's publicly accessible. And the Second one I got was obviously this Cathedral Rangers stuff, which was just basically an entrapment scheme where we were out camping at a and in the car park. We came back to the car park where we had been camping. There's a bunch of Antifa there. The Antifa were taking photos. Someone's tire had been slashed. So Tom obviously walked up to them, was going to ask them, and as soon as Tom was walking up to them, they decided that they wanted to get away. So they started driving, how do you say it, erratically, ended up hitting one of our boys, and then it just basically became a bit of a chaos of people trying to get these Antifa out of their car for hitting someone. And then they crashed into a boulder, drove off, told the police a different story to that. They said that just we randomly basically just they were filming, and then we just showed up and smashed their window. And there was like they said that in their witness statement, they said there was like 15 people around the car smashing the car. So basically, I got arrested for that. There was no evidence that I got arrested, sorry, that I committed the crime, so I was released, and then a month later I was rearrested and then charged with armed robbery, violent disorder, all a bunch of charges. So it's such a complex thing. I'll also have to talk about this entrapment scheme was done while there was an infiltrator in the group, so a media infiltrator who basically told the Antifa where we were to cause problems. And counterterrorism were there as well. All this came out in the court. But then, when we wanted the crucial evidence, basically showing that these people orchestrated what happened, they have this thing called public interest immunity. So, the police and Channel 9, who were doing the investigation, went to the court and said, basically, it's in the public interest that this isn't shown in court, because then it will be shown to the public and it will be injurious to the public's perception of the state. So basically, when these intelligence agencies and journalists act unethically and basically illegally, the court just says, actually, it doesn't have to be talked about in court because it's going to look bad for the system. So that was crazy. But yeah, I ended up pleading guilty just to violent disorder, which is a lesser charge, which makes me sound like a violent criminal. But violent disorder isn't even really a violent crime. Like, you can be convicted of violent disorder despite not committing any violence at all. Basically, if you're proven to be part of a group of six or more people, and one of those people commit violence on behalf of the group, or perceived to commit violence on behalf of the group, then you can be convicted of violent disorder. So it's basically guilt by association, literally. And these laws were only put in recently, in response to the United Patriot Front rallies, where there were fist fights going on between Antifa and the Patriots. So it's actually an inherently political law, which is basically made to convict people, not of violence, but being part of a group when some violence breaks out. So I ended up pleading guilty to that. I got sentenced to like 3 days, which I had already served when I had been initially arrested. Then after that, I had another bill postering one, which was just putting some stickers up in the where was it? Just out in the street on posts. Counterterrorism raided me, charged me with bill postering. I just pled guilty to that because I don't think I'm going to be able to argue against the validity of the bill postering law, even though I actually just disagree with it. Like, I think people should be allowed to put up posters and stickers and things in public. Like, I don't think that's really a massive issue, but the Australian government thinks it is. So I get it against like maybe private businesses, it makes sense, like having bill postering laws for that, but just like random street poles and things, I think you should be able to put up posters. But anyway, I pled guilty to that. ended up getting 300 a $3,000 fine for that, which is crazy. Like, that's in far in excess of what other people get. Like, the person before me was an Asian, like a Chinese man who wasn't even a citizen, who was selling cars for an Asian crime syndicate, like stolen cars. So an Asian crime syndicate was stealing cars and then he was reselling them. He got a $1,500 fine for that,
Oh my
for
God.
selling cars for a fucking for a criminal group. And meanwhile, I put up 57 stickers and I get a $3,000 fine. So pretty crazy. And to come back to the violent disorder one that I pled guilty to, I also got 200 hours of community service. I didn't mention that, but community service is crazy in Australia. Like, gone are the days of the chain gang where you'll go, I don't know, maybe break some rocks or something while you're chained to other prisoners. I was literally in an air conditioned room, knitting for 200 hours, like knitting sweaters for the homeless. So I was just there doing the same repetitive stuff. It was crazy. Like, this must be what they've actually got, like real criminals, like pedophiles, and like armed robbers and things like that doing. Like, they go into an air conditioned room by themselves and they knit. So that's insane. And then obviously the last thing I've been charged with was this Nazi salute one, which I already talked about. So that's still going on. All these other cases are in the past, thankfully. And now I'm just trying to be a good boy. I think I'm going to go join the Liberal Party, make sure that I'm no longer charged. I got to be get my book learnings, go to university, get a politics degree. We just got to accept the diversity. I think the sad thing is I'm just incorrigible, so I'll probably be getting more charges as the time goes on and the punishments will get more severe, but that's just part of the struggle, I guess.
Yeah, well, you take it in good stride, in good spirits. If you're going to do anything IRL, you're going to be up against the police, especially in somewhere like Australia. You've seen the whole entire growth of these particular laws, where they're creating laws customized, it seems like, just to mess with right-wing groups in Australia. You have a rally, some kind of patriot rally. Antifa shows up, they cause a big fight, they cause a big stink. They don't get any charges or anything else. The right-wingers, wherever they may be on the spectrum, get the charges, and then the whole new set of laws come down. It's like a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Well, the problem is these politicians who are doing it at the behest of the Jews view laws as weapons to be used against their political opposition rather than to make the country better, to uphold order, to punish people that are engaging in serious criminality, killing people, raping people, these things. The problem is those people are given the velvet glove treatment. When it comes to going to the courts, you've got these offenders that are just constantly committing these heinous crimes, constantly destroying property, stealing property, raping people, and all that, and they're basically getting light sentences. Whereas political people are basically having all these laws created to constantly get them charged in the justice system, and then they're getting the book thrown at them. So while it isn't as severe as what the people in the United Kingdom are suffering under, the draconian regime there, where this kind of two-tier justice is just completely out of control, Australia is more or less going down that path, but not as severe.
Yeah, it seems like it that this whole entire ordeal post-COVID, it seems like a lot of different experiments were being done on our particular populations during COVID to see what they could get away with and how far they could push things. And It seems like now that they just want to, there's been a considerable amount of pushback, at least in America. Pushback meaning the average person, they know the average person is really pissed off, and we have various different Republicans, especially, that are feeding off of that. We haven't really seen any action that we would like some type of overwhelming action. At the same time, there is a lot of talk. Do you guys have any right-wing politicians in Australia that you think are particularly dangerous? Meaning that they say a lot of the maybe things that you might agree with leading down that particular path, but at the same time, you know they're not going to do anything.
There isn't really a strong kind of right wing kind of like watered down nationalist alternative here in Australia. Like it's either basically the cuck micro parties or the National Socialist Network. Like you get your choose. So that has been quite beneficial to us. But it means that in terms of electoralism and the parliament, you've only really got characters like Senator Babbitt, which hey, he's a decent enough guy, but fundamentally he's from Mauritius, he's a non-white, and I think we can aspire to more when it comes to a genuine right wing in Australia. And then you've got the One Nation Party, which is basically a bunch of sellouts. Like an election has just been called here in Australia, and Pauline Hanson, who's the leader of One Nation, was endorsing the centre right Liberal Party, the head of the Liberal Party for Prime Minister. And he's like a disgusting cave troll, Peter Dutton. He ended up back when he was Home Affairs, the head of Home Affairs, he prescribed a bunch of far right groups, which aren't even groups in Australia. Like one of them was called the Sonnenkrieg Division, which was like a Discord server run by a 13-year-old in Estonia. But this is just like the insanity of the counterterrorism industry and the hysteria around so-called far right terrorism, which hasn't there hasn't been an instance of far right terrorism in over 30 years in Australia. The last thing was a bunch of national socialists in Western Australia burnt down like three Chinese restaurants, and they got severely punished for it. They got like 20-year sentences for it. So there hasn't been any terrorism since then, but the last decade there's just been hysteria around it because of I guess international incidences with in other countries. But it hasn't been a problem here in Australia. But nonetheless, this conservative ended up prescribing a Discord server in Estonia that's on it. He couldn't even pronounce the name of the group. He called it like Shannonkrieg Division instead of Sonnenkrieg, which obviously a German word. And then I think they prescribed the base and all kinds of groups that were defunct anyway. And it's just insanity. But I just think that I actually hope that the left wing party gets in rather than the right wing party, because number one, like they're basically the same on anything that we actually care about in terms of public policy. But the problem with the conservatives is they are far more likely to actually prescribe like the National Socialist Network, for example. Even though we haven't done any terrorism, like they'll just do it because they just own the left by like making them, well, we're not Nazis. Like we're gonna take away these people's rights, throw them in jail, for having the temerity to put up some stickers, train at the park, and hold a public demonstration. So we're probably just gonna have to push that. Tell everyone, vote for the right wing micro parties because they'll probably, obviously, they're not even gonna get in power. But I'd honestly preference Labor before Liberal. Because on that issue, that one issue which is existential for our movement, actually, it's probably better to vote for Labor. Like, I don't think Albanese is going to be prescribing NSN. But Peter Dutton, I'd say there's a good chance that he would.
Yeah, there's a lot of different dangerous elements, and as soon as you start, they seem to always like an enemy, especially an enemy that is young, white, and marching up and down the street, agitating, if you will. It's like enemy number one, that's for sure. Let me move over, and one of these I liked quite well. Let me play this, and you can comment. A lot of times, we find various different non-whites that may agree with many of our ideals. I prefer the ones that are in their own countries myself, because that's about the only ones you can really deal with long term. And let's say a nationalist in their own country and not in our countries. The ones in our countries, they typically want to stay, and that's a challenge. Let me play this and you can comment.
We can with the non-whites. We'll do.
See if I can't jack this up, the sound a little bit.
Only confuse the public and make our racist proselytizing all the more difficult. And besides, if we cannot ally with the non-whites in our countries. Their habitation in our lands is against our fundamental principles. Allying ourselves with the non-whites will only confuse the public and make our racist proselytizing all the more difficult. And besides, a few non-whites that are okay with our efforts to deport them back to where they actually belong have little to provide for us materially.
You want to comment on that? I think it's kind of self-explanatory, but.
Yeah, that's a short and sweet one. I think there's a lot of people that think that somehow we can ally with non-whites, whether when they agree with us on one or more issues, whether it be Jews is probably the main one that will make people think we should ally with them. The only person that I would actually ally with is someone like a Marcus Garvey, whose mission is basically to start self-deporting as many non-whites of their particular community back to their country. And obviously Marcus Garvey was quite successful in doing that, and he was shut down by the government because of it. But the problem is most of these people actually aren't focused on that. Like, they don't want to return back to their nations. Like, and as I said, it's against our fundamental principles. We're nationalists. We want to live amongst our kind in our own country. We want to be spending our time with our people, focusing on making them better. Whereas these non-white so-called nationalists actually are among foreigners, primarily for material benefit. They're not doing anything for their people. You know, at best, maybe they'll be sending some money back, back from the country to perhaps their immediate family. But the problem is, like, that's not, that's not how you can be best serving your nation. You actually got to be living amongst your nation. And these people could probably just benefit from, they're here now, probably just get an education, probably have some capital. They could be living as basically elites in their own countries if they return to them, but access to white people is more important to them. Living in this kind of Western degenerate country is more important to them. So that's why we can't really ally with them. And there's obviously the practical political propaganda point that it's only just going to confuse people when perhaps we're talking to these non-whites. Like, we can talk to non-whites on the internet, we can converse with them, but to have them in the group, to be working with them, is just confusing. It's confusing to people because they're like, well, how is this any different from the society we're living in?
Yeah. So Carmel Island was a pretty funny ideal. I imagine you saw the video. You've heard Tom's ideal of Carmel Island. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yes. That was he was talking about Senator Babbitt, as I said previously, Mauritius. So we're gonna have to colonize islands in the Indian Ocean, and we're gonna have to send the non-whites to these islands. The based ones, the so-called based ones, because if they've done like enough to tip them over the scale, then we can send them to like the nice island. But otherwise, they're going back to whatever third world squalor they originate from.
Yeah, Chocolate Island. It was very funny. Like, okay. Since you're like base non-white, you believe that we built Australia. You're right on your politics. We're not just going to deport you. We're going to deport you to some paradise. Something like that could actually work, though. It's a mass movement, which is kind of funny. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, that's what I'd want to do with the Aboriginals, honestly, man. We gotta find like some big island for them, because I'm not someone that wants to exterminate the Aboriginals, because I'm a conservationist. I like keeping different animal species alive. But we need to open up all of Australia for development, and we're probably just gonna have to send them to some sort of island where they can live. And their race can live on islands. Like they're similar to the Papua New Guineans. They're the same race, so they've proven they can live on an island. So we'll send them to an island. We'll call it like Petrol Island or something, for the marketing of it, and they can go there and do what they've been doing for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of contact with Abos on a day-to-day basis?
Not at all, because I live in Melbourne. There's basically no Aboriginals here in Melbourne. Like when I see one, it's like I'll see one like once every 2 years, and I'll be like, "Look, there's an actual full-blooded Aboriginal." That's crazy. But if you go to like the, it's like as far the further west and the further north you go, the more Aboriginals you find. So they'll be up in Queensland and Northern Territory, Western Australia, South Australia, but Victoria and Tasmania, and I live in Victoria, there's not many Abos left.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about the Abo population, as far as where they're located in Australia, just that they're in Australia. Someone's recommending you guys can take over New Zealand, maybe bring all the whites from New Zealand to Australia, and make
Well,
that into
yeah,
some type of campground. I don't know about
they
that, though. New Zealand's pretty nice.
don't have any movement really there that's organizing things. So it seems like the Australian movement's going to have to invade and annex New Zealand and just sort out their stuff. We'll show up with like landing craft on the beach, and then there'll be like a bunch of Maoris there doing their gay dance, and then we'll just like hit them with an artillery shell or something.
I don't know about that one. It sounds like a great movie though. Sounds like something we could look forward to, you know.
Nah, well that's not a Fed post at all, because like
No, not at
the
all.
theoretically I'm talking about, obviously we've taken state power
Right.
and we've legally declared war on New Zealand, and obviously a war has begun. So there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with talking about
Or New Zealand Patriots might invite you in.
Well, who knows? Maybe some of them will be like, "Oh, no, we must defend our Maoris. We must defend our cannibals." Who knows? Who knows what the New Zealand Patriots will be thinking?
Let me play this next one. Hold on here. Let's see what we got tooled up.
We ought not forget that our enemies have no restraint in their vicious slander against our movement. I remember when they used to unequivocally call us terrorists for merely putting up stickers. And so we shouldn't be shy in repaying the favor to these anthropoid vermin. Don't feel any remorse in calling our enemies what they are: mercenaries, torturers, traitors, pedophiles, and parasites. We ought not.
Anthropoid vermin. That's a good one.
Yeah, that comes from Revolo P. Oliver. Like I can't remember exactly where he said it, but I just loved that when he said that. So I'm like, I'm a lot of th things that I say, I'm popularizing Revlo P. Oliver's writings, because I love the way that I love Revlo P. Oliver, man. He's got such a great writing style, and he's just such a funny dude, man. Like he's not only very serious and very like erudite, but also he's extremely funny with the way he would write things. So if people go and research Revel O.P. Oliver and read some of the things, you'll probably recognize some of like some phrases and words that he uses.
Yeah, he's a very famous American writer. I think he was a. Did he have a PhD in literature?
I think it was in classics. And it's because he learned Sanskrit at a young age. He just found some wandering sage, I guess, some Indian like guru. And then he learned Sanskrit at a young age, and I think they gave him a scholarship based on it.
He was a co-founder of the John Birch Society. He had a lot of base things to say. He's a great American, a lot underrated writer for sure. Involved in the right wing, the real right wing in America for years and years and decades. White nationalism. In 1966, Oliver embarrassed Welch by proclaiming the world's troubles would end it if all Jews were vaporized at dawn tomorrow, along with Illuminati and Bolsheviks.
That's actually not true. It may have embarrassed Oliver, but when
no, Oliver Rebel embarrassed Lou, Welch. Oliver
that comes from one of his speeches called "Conspiracy or Degeneracy," and he basically the point he was making is that he doesn't think that the world's troubles would be ended if all the Jews were vaporized at dawn tomorrow with the Illuminati and Bolsheviks,
right.
Because basically. There's conspiracy in terms of these people being conspirators that are forcing that trying their utmost to create degeneration, but also there's degeneration insofar as we have so many idiots and degenerates that are basically destroying the society as well.
Yeah, there's a natural decay in things, a decline, and it seems like elements of our enemy generally just accelerate that natural decline. Went into high speed post-World War II. You know, like you read about the decline of Rome, it happened over centuries. In our society, it's like the demons of decay immediately set in.
Well, Jews were around back then as well.
Sure.
Helping destroy Rome.
Sure. In one form or another, 100%. Whole section of the Eastern Roman Empire was Jewish or Talmudic. There was no such thing as Jewish at that time. Talmudic by conversion, which is kind of interesting. It was a Babylonian mystery religion, became quite popular in Rome. The money changers in the temple. But he is a famous figure you would often see promoted in various different outlets like Stormfront back in the day. How did you find Revel O.P. Oliver, out of curiosity, would you come across him online?
Yeah, I came across him online. I can't recall exactly how I found him, but yeah, he's prolific. Yeah, a lot of people like him. There's a lot of people that don't know about him, which is surprising, but you can find him in all kinds of our spaces, you know.
Yeah, he's a giant, actually. I'm surprised you knew about him. A young Australian knew about Revel O.P. Oliver. Still going on strong.
I've read all his stuff, man. It's good. Kevin Alfred Strom basically archived all his stuff on... well, there's two websites, but there's a newer one. I can't remember. I have difficulty finding it because the link is something... Which is hard. It's like hard to find through Google search. It's revelo-oliver.com. Yeah, you can just go on there and you can find basically all of his writings. I actually prefer the old website. The new website is a bit more flashy, but it's actually harder to navigate his writings. And the old web, you can find the original one on that website. And it's got all kinds of cool photos. All of his articles.
Revelo-oliver.com. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, his stuff has been online for quite a while. National Vanguard published a lot of his stuff, republished it. Trying to think of the first time I read Revelo. Interesting.
Yeah.
Any other Americans? Go ahead.
He's very intellectual, and he'll use all kinds of like obscure words, abstruse words. But like at the same time, he's so funny. Like he'll just be writing like he's just always so sarcastic and so dry with his humor.
Yeah, he was he was born and raised at a time when we produced great white men. And the universities produce great white men, you know. And he was a serious academic that was pushed into the right wing out of necessity, really. That his country is being destroyed, his race is being destroyed. And fascinating. I'm curious to see how the guys like this will be viewed a few hundred years from now. I'm thinking he'll still be read because he captures a lot of the 20th century in his writing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of these people will still be read. Like, I think George Lincoln Rockwell will still be read, William Pierce, Revelo P. Oliver. Like, I think really racial nationalism is a future. Like, there's a lot of good stuff from that time. But I think, like, really the radical stuff is the things that are going to be remembered.
Give me an example.
Of what will be remembered or what won't be remembered.
What do you mean by radical? I mean, when you say radical, what are you talking about?
Racial nationalists, basically. Like, people that are racist as opposed
uncompromising.
To kind of, like, libertarians.
Yeah.
Anti-government people, all those. Like, because that kind of stuff isn't as ideological. Basically, just being a libertarian. It is ideological, but it's not building a new ideology that's actually going to build a movement in the future that will go back and remember the fathers of the ideology. I don't think libertarian, you know, I don't think people are going to go back and read the Ron Paul letter, you know, Ron Paul letters in 200 years time.
Yeah, I can see them reading Turner diaries though and saying, look at this moderate. And there's going to be debates over, you know, was Pierce a moderate? Was Oliver a moderate? You know, was this moderate writing based on what had to be done to repair these societies? That's what's going to be pretty funny, you know, what they're debating. You know how whites like debating such things, getting all pedantic.
Well, the thing with, you know, Pierce and Oliver is they're not moderates. Like when they talk about what needs to be done, it's quite
no
it's
I was that was extreme. I was making a joke.
Yeah, exactly. The ones even George Lincoln Rockwell, like you could probably say George Lincoln Rockwell was probably the most moderate out of them all, but he still advocated basic and it's actually just a moderate position at the time, which is obviously gassing traitors, because traders were actually being gassed, like the Rosenbergs. You know, Jewish traders were being gassed. So
we have a big problem. Funny. We have a big problem with white traders too. I know that in Australia, it's what keeps everyone else in power.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. We'll just have to see if basically their crimes are their treason against our nation warrants capital punishment, or whether or not they can be amnestied. I think a lot of people can be amnestied, but there's also people that have basically caused so much damage to our society and will end up having lots of people killed that the only way to bring justice will have to be to give them a fair trial. And if they are proven to have been particularly destructive in their treason, to dish out capital punishment.
Yeah. What do we owe our traitors? There are just so many.
Yeah, fair trial.
So many, a fair trial.
That's what Revelo P. Oliver actually says. He's like, what do we, in one of his speeches, I think it's, what's the speech? It's his most, what we owe our parasites is the speech, which is a great speech. Everyone should listen to it. But towards the end, he says, what do we owe the unspeakable gang in Washington a fair trial? It's a great bit of his speech.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let me play your next one.
Politics is for the men of the world, the men of action. Armchair intellectuals love to weigh in on activism with their advice, but none of it is of any use because they're too alienated and detached from the world as it is given, from reality. That doesn't mean we activists must be devoid of thought. We certainly need intelligence and rumination about the ideals for which we are fighting and the strategy and method with which we'll fight. But all that will be for naught without the fight and without the fighters. Politics must be rooted in reality and tied to action. Only practical thought can be practically realized.
Okay. Interesting.
I didn't realize this podcast was going to be the Jacob Hursten torture session. Cause, like, I don't like watching my own videos. Like,
yeah, it's tough. You got to close your eyes. But I figured I'd play a few so get you more subscribers and people can watch these little
videos. Yeah, it's just like it's hard to listen to, like, watch your own content. I find
it's impossible. It's impossible. Yeah, you'll get to the point where you can't hear. Yeah, you won't be able to
understand
your own voice.
I only watch my videos at 2x speed because, like, I already know what's being said anyway. Right. And I just find it far easier to listen to my 2x speed voice, which is a bit like, obviously it's a bit more detached from how you actually are when you're presenting yourself. Because when I listen to it, I'm like, oh, that's brutal. That's
no, they're actually very good. They're very good. I picked out four of them to play. I only picked out four of them to play to give people a
that's
taste.
That's right. You can keep playing them. I'm just saying.
This is the first time you're on the show, so I figured I'd have to play a few. So
yeah.
this, but I
was just thinking I might have to, you know, go and cancel my appeal and go do a month in prison. Sounds a bit better than this torture.
No, it is one of the preoccupations of broadcasting, if you will, or doing any type of voiceover work, propaganda, whatever you want to call it, is you will not like your own voice. You don't like watching your own stuff. That's kind of par for the course. But these are so short. They're so short, and you make many very good points. You know, I just thought I'd throw them in there. Now I forgot the point you were making here.
That one was a good one. About people there. We have so many armchair kind of intellectuals that are always criticizing us, brutally criticizing us as well, calling us like complete idiots. But the reality is, like, when I started, like, there were so many assumptions that I had that were wrong, that got proven, wrong with basically first contact with reality, you know,
like what assumptions? Give us an idea.
Yeah, no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. And just no plan in general survives first contact with reality. Yeah, these people want to lecture us on what we're doing, even though none of them are actually putting any of the ideas into practice. They're not trying to actually change the world with them. And yet they lecture us on the internet. That's one of the downsides of the internet, is that basically anyone can become a preacher and basically give all kinds of advice, even though they know nothing about nothing.
Yeah. Organizing is very difficult because you're dealing with a group that hasn't been organized in a very, very long time, at least from a racial perspective. And so it's very difficult, especially online, when you see all these particular, the messaging, if you will, is by and large mainstream, especially in somewhere like America, and being co-opted by mainstream elements. And then you have our guys, which are attempting to start to organize and have been now for a handful of years. It's very challenging. The enemy has all kinds of think tanks and all kinds of talking heads as well. They're not anonymous, though, unfortunately. they're a known quantity, but you... That is one of the downsides of the internet. Anyone can be a blog. Anyone can get a blog. Anyone can be a reporter. There's upsides and downsides. Anyone can make content. Making the good stuff, you know, takes time, and it's whether or not it'll stand the test of time or not. But that is a challenge. Anytime you're trying to, I mean, you guys are effectively organizing young whites, and that's not something that's been done from an explicit racial perspective in Australia in like decades. You know. Not probably since the White Australia policy, right? Other than small groups like yourself.
Yes, and previously it was obviously done with liberalism attached to it. So that was basically the beginning of the end. So even if we did have a homogeneous population and we were the super majority on this continent, they are only in this position now because the ideas which animated the majority of the population were destructive, and that's why we're being destroyed. So we are not only trying to return to a white majority in Australia, well, a white super majority having exclusive possession of this continent, but also changing the ideas of the whites that are on this continent so that we can keep this continent in perpetuity.
It is a giant place, and it's a ton of natural resources in Australia, and it's not something we want to lose. It's for 100. That is for sure. That is for sure. Hold on here. We've got a comment. Jack DeCripper is commenting. He's one of your big fans. About time you got this Aryan chat on. Jacob, your voice kicks ass. I share your videos all over the place. He's saying from him, he doesn't send out unsolicited nudes, but he will send out unsolicited Jacob Hersant videos. Well, that's good to know. It's good to know. You got some fans out there.
Oh, me, I do both. I do them at the same time. There you go.
Well,
You get one April Fool's joke because it's in Australia.
oh, it's April Fool's in
It's
Australia.
April 1st here now.
There you go. No nudes by Jacob Hersant on Telegram. So there you go. Oh man. So basically, what do you guys have planned going forward? Do you have any plans you can disclose? I know you're doing activism, you're doing rallies, but it seems like every rally you do, it leads to a few more arrests. Not that that's going to preclude you guys from doing it or say, anything like that, because it seems like you've always been prepared for the struggle. Do you have any plans other than that? Do you have any propaganda plans that you'd like to share? Any like new setups going on, new ideals?
Well, right now we're just in focusing on expanding the movement so that we can have people support us more easily, because right now we're re relying on infrastructure which isn't our own, whether it be like GiveSendGo, which has cancelled our donation pages previously. They haven't done it on the last few ones, which has been good. I don't know why they canceled it once but haven't done it again, but nonetheless it's still relying on a third party for to have supporters support us with their money. But we're having all kinds of issues with the Australian government basically just trying to shut down our ability to have supporters, people that support us financially, support us in other ways. So we're trying to build the infrastructure to facilitate that as easily kind of as possible. So there's been a lot of work on that in the background. A lot of our effort is being taken up. A lot of our time is being taken up with that. So we're just focused on that right now. And yeah, in the next few months or so, there should be some progress that we can show to people in that regard.
Yeah, it seems like they're always wanting to shut down every avenue they can for us, whether it be bank accounts, anything and everything they can, they will go after. That is somewhat universal. It's just over here, there's so many targets that they label, let's say, Nazi. There's so many targets for them to go after. In Australia, It doesn't look like there's a lot of targets. It's just you guys. So it seems to me.
Yeah, well, we're taking basically the brunt of the enemy's blows because there isn't really any other established groups that are anywhere near as organized or radical or active as us. So basically, everyone there that has been a benefit insofar as basically we've become like a household name in Australia, and heaps of, basically, more or less all political discussion revolves around us in some way. Basically, every commentator is talking about the Nazis in black, you know, with the masks and all that kind of stuff. So that's been good. But at the same time, if we're the only people being talked about, then we're also the only people that are basically being persecuted by the government, because the government doesn't like us, obviously. So there are other groups, but they seem to be doing okay by virtue of we're taking all the blows.
Yeah, interesting. And, you know, how many different run-ins have you had personally with Antifa? Antifa's pretty vibrant over there. I know that one of your particular members had a car burned down. I remember seeing the video of it. I don't remember exactly who it was, though.
Yeah, that was Tim Lutzer, and he was just at home one night with his family. His wife was pregnant, and he's got a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old. And, yeah, they were just at home, and then this Antifa terrorist showed up, threw Molotov cocktail at his car, burnt it down, tried to burn down his other car, but it bounced off, luckily. And, yeah, just insane. A brazen terrorist attack, which Victoria Police Counterterrorism have basically didn't investigate, and that they've officially stopped investigating it anyway. Even though they didn't really do anything, they didn't even collect evidence at the site. They're just useless. Like, it's just insane that these anti-fascists can literally engage in terrorist attacks against families, have no investigation into them, whereas I put up 57 stickers and counterterrorism are raiding me and dragging me through the courts over bill postering. So the two-tier justice here is just ridiculous. But in terms of my personal dealings with Antifa, the only time I've ever seen Antifa is running into them at like rallies and things like that. So they are, it's not like I'm a skinhead with like swastika tattoos all over me that people recognize me in the street. Like, actually, I'm more and more recognized now that I've got a lot of publicity around the salute case and all that kind of stuff in my videos. So people do recognize me now, but previously, I'm just a gray man. I just blend into the crowd. People don't really notice me. I liked it that way. Now there's probably going to be more and more people that recognize me, and I might have some kerfuffles with Antifa, but you know, if that happens, I'm going to have to keep it on the down low, because if the police find out, well, you know, I'm obviously, you know, I'm a guilty until proven innocent. Like, obviously, I was walking down the street just trying to find an Antifa to attack. Like, like it's totally not the other way around, where these people, their whole political identity is based on trying to destroy our movement. So if they saw us in public and they felt emboldened enough that they would be the ones that attack us, no, that could never be the case. Like, we're you know, we're like the balaclava bandits. We're like soon to be terrorists, according to Davir Abramovich.
Basically, you guys have enormous, well, a fairly good number of events like the one we're looking at right here. Activities, if you will, training sessions going on every single week. But yet at the same time, I hear every once in a while I've heard that the police disrupt one of them, but many of them go off without a hitch, right? The police aren't around. They're not messing with you.
Yeah, well, at training, basically, police never really show up. Like, police only show up when we're out doing something public-facing, like a demonstration. They showed up at the Shrine of Remembrance, even though we weren't even there to do, like, anything public-facing. We were there to, like, listen to the last post, which was basically being cancelled. It has been reinstated now, but at that time, it was looking like it was going to be the last of the last post. So we went there to listen to it, and there was like 60 cops that just basically formed a wall and wouldn't let us attend the shrine, which with laws that, and they just straight up lied about what they can even do with the laws. Like, I went and read the legislation after it, The laws say that they can kick us out of the inner shrine, which is the actual building. They can't kick us from the reserve around the shrine. So basically, this is the problem with the police. Like, they, none of them respect the law. They're basically criminals playing on easy mode who think that they can do whatever they want because they have the gun. And there's no power to keep them in check. Like, and Tim Lutzer and Jermone Roberts are going to court regarding this because they got arrested for trying to attend the shrine again. You can explain this to the magistrate and maybe the magistrate will find you not guilty, but there's never ever going to be any justice brought to the police when they do these things.
Yeah, it seems that way. It's well, Antifa groups like that are long co-opted by the establishment. If there's an upstart group like you guys getting too big or even something that they just want to wail on, they send out Antifa and they can pretty much get away with anything, including burning down cars and do whatever
well,
they
yeah,
want.
It's so easy to get co-opted if your identity is based on just being against something rather than positively for something. And that's why we have to focus primarily on being for the white race and for National Socialism rather than being opposed to all these groups. Because if we're positively for something, that necessarily determines who your enemies are anyway. But these people, basically, their whole identity is based on being against us, being anti-fascist. So they can easily be co-opted by whatever force wants to use them against fascism. And that's literally what happens. The problem is these anti-fascists, you got to think about what they actually do in their daily activity. These people basically act out the role of being intelligence officers, like being like feds, being, police analysts. Like, they spend their time there collecting information, handing it to law enforcement to try and get us charged and all these kind of things. And when you spend your time imitating system pigs, imitating, intelligence officers, you're basically doing their job for them. You're actually upholding the system. And obviously none of these people realize that. They're too stupid to realize it. They genuinely think they're the revolution. Like, they think that they're actually fighting against the white supremacist capitalist system. When really they're just being useful idiots for them.
Yeah, I got a couple questions down that particular road, but let's get to this. Crafty Booms, thank you very much. White power to you too, sir. Longview, does Jacob have anything to say about recent posts about Joel Davis? I don't know if that's specific. I'm assuming you're referring, Longview, to about the discussion between Joel Davis and Keith Woods, maybe? I'm guessing that's what they think. I don't know. Do you have anything to say about that? Anything you want to say about that?
Any well, opinions? Yeah, I don't know if it is referring to that. Yeah, I did read. I read the argument between them. Obviously, I agree with Joel Davis because I am a National Socialist.
Right.
And I just have the position that Adolf Hitler is like, obviously he's a historical figure, but he's also like a symbol. He's a symbol of the white race, and to our enemies, basically, he is a concrete symbol which represents all the principles that we're going to have to take up, whether it be racism, nationalism, socialism, anti-Semitism, all of these kind of things. He's basically become like a super symbol. He is basically like the symbol of those principles in the public consciousness and in the minds of our enemies. So to actually be able to rehabilitate those principles, which all of us basically agree with, racism, nationalism, anti-Semitism, socialism, you're actually going to have to rehabilitate this symbol, which is Adolf Hitler. And that's my position. You can't just sidestep it. You can't sidestep it because to sidestep it is basically to say, all of history after the Second World War hasn't happened. Like, it has happened. And you can't just pretend that you don't know about the largest war in human history. You can't sidestep it. You've got to have a position on it because it's even if it wasn't so pertinent to our world right now, Because obviously the whole post-war order is what we're living in. It's such a big historical event that you need to have a position on it to be basically taken seriously. And I think the opposition in this argument are taking the position that they think it's going to be easier if we just try to sidestep the demonization of this particular movement. But you can't sidestep it, because the reason they demonize that movement is because they want the principles behind it to be demonized as well. And we can't abandon those principles. Those principles are our principles. They're what are necessary for us to survive as a distinct and honorable people. And we cannot make the mistake of thinking that the Jews are angry about the swastika, or they're angry about what the Germans, you know, overturning the Treaty of Versailles or whatever. What they're angry about, the Nazis, is the fact that they represent racism, nationalism, socialism, anti-Semitism, militarism, all these kind of things. And we cannot abandon those principles. And the proof of that is the fact that the post-war order has attacked all those things. They didn't just attack Germany and destroy the National Socialist movement there. They actually moved on from that, and they dismantled all of the racisms of the West, all of the nationalisms of the West, all of the socialisms. Let's not confuse what we call National Socialism or Prussian Socialism with obviously Marxist Socialism or Communism. Two different things, but obviously they dismantled what we call, what Spengler would call Prussian socialism. Militarism, with the exception of the US, I guess. The US still has a strong military. But Australia's military has been absolutely butchered, basically. It's basically a joke force, mercenary force used to, basically destroy enemies of the Jews abroad. So we have to rehabilitate Adolf Hitler. And obviously we can, I won't get too deep into, a lot of them are kind of getting sidetracked with the particularities of that war, and they're just trying to say that Adolf Hitler was not pan-European because, various statements of him during the largest war in history. But you can't really, I guess I am going to get into this now. You can't really just sit there. Yeah, I'm just too passionate about it. I have to talk about it.
Sorry.
Like, it's like me just like veins popping out of my neck. Like, I must defend Adolf Hitler right now. I'm his strongest soldier. But the problem is they always take it obviously out of context. Like, before the Second World War, Adolf Hitler was obviously a pan-European figure. In Mein Kampf, he talks about the greater good of the whole white race. That is his mindset. And people talk about, oh my God, he was so mean to the other countries that he basically had to wage war against, like France. But the reality is, if you look at what happened when the Germans occupied France, they actually ran France better than the French were. Like, let's contrast how the Germans treated the French with how the French treated the Germans after the First World War. So after the First World War, the French occupied part of Germany, obviously, and they brought in black troops who basically acted extremely, extremely terribly to the population, were raping women, all these kind of things. Whereas when the Germans took over France, what did they do? They exploded that massive statue they made to the black soldiers. So they destroyed the anti-white sculptures they had. They started deporting the blacks, and basically removed all of the blacks that had been immigrated to France, out of France. So the reality is the Germans were running France better for the French than the French were running it for themselves. And that is actually how a paternal, pan-European strong nation should act. If they shouldn't just be leaving the French to themselves. If the French aren't going to run France how they need to be, how they need to be run. And if the Germans had taken over Australia, and like let's say somehow Adolf Hitler comes back, he's resurrected, he takes over Germany. Germany, they invade Australia right now, and then the Germans take over Australia and they start deporting all of the non-whites, and they make Australia honorable again and all that, and there's all this happens. Actually, I would be in favor of that. I'd be, because actually it's not about, to me, it's not actually as much about self-determination to me as living honorably and having our nation act honorably. And if that has to be done under the aegis of a strong national socialist government of a different nation, then I have no problem with that. And
as long as it's white, as long as it's white. Obviously.
Yes. Well, obviously. Even like, yeah, well, obviously it's going to have to basically be white. But if the, if there was some bizarro world where, like, I don't know, somehow the Japanese became national socialists, took over Australia, and basically, instead of, like, immigrating people, they basically set up a puppet regime of whites that deported all of the non-whites. Well, it's not ideal that we have non-whites basically having a puppet regime over us. But the problem is, it'd be better than we have today. Because not only are we ruled by Jews who are non-whites, so we have a foreign regime, but that government is actually destroying us genetically, but through supplanting us through replacement immigration. So obviously that's not like, that's just a complete thought experiment. I don't think that would ever actually happen. If any non-white country were to take over our country, they wouldn't actually want to help us out. Like, they would probably just start replacing
wiping our people. You out. Yeah, they're not going to be as nice as we are, put people on reservations and stuff like that. I would imagine the Chinese would be brutal, in my opinion. So
yeah, obviously. But the thing is, that the violence of the Germans, the fact that they actually helped the French. Like, they actually were doing good things for the French. And I think these ideas of exterminationism, like saying that the Polish nation would have been exterminated, or they would have been set that were hated, basically like slaves, I think that's just revisionism. I think that's just ridiculous. I think anyone that actually believes that is basically... they're almost like buying into half of the Holocaust myth without like going the full way.
Yeah, the World War II, it becomes like religion in so much as you have this object there that is causing issues. And we really can't handle it from a racial perspective. In so much as you've got the major powers that be investing so much money in propaganda, brainwashing people, you can't have any rational discussions. So I think one of the good things about our particular groups is that you can actually have rational discussions. that is why people are generally attracted to various different content, is because you can actually have discussions about things. Whereas if you're up against a propaganda machine, all they want you doing is repeating particular slogans over and over again and putting images in heads over and over again. And these days, that's no longer working the same way it did work, simply because there's another new form of communication has been out long enough to start diffusing things. So you have a lot of questions being asked. I noticed that it seems like every other day, the Ayatollahs in Iran, the Ayatollah of Iran, is asking questions on Twitter over and over again about World War II and various different things we're doing, and just basic questions, you know. People want answers, or they at least want a discussion toward answers, not more propaganda. When it comes back to Joel Davis, I think in terms of like social media success and things like that, you guys have been banned a whole lot. It seems like it was a state effort, right? Would you agree with that? As far as getting you banned off Telegram, Twitter, so on and so forth. It's like an Australia policy. They call up someone in Australia, it seems like, is calling up these particular organizations. Or do you think it's done through Antifa?
No, it's definitely done through state actors. So I've been banned off every single platform except for Gab. And even state actors are even asking Gab to do it, but Andrew Torba, to his credit, has just told them no. But yeah, I've been banned off like everything, Telegram,
What's the reason for ba what's
Facebook, Instagram.
what is the reason? Have you seen any of the letters they're sending in on you? Why ban Jacob Hursan? I mean, your videos are, you're not using, you're not talking in crazy terms. You're not saying anything glowy that I can tell in any of these videos. The next one we're going to play, there's nothing glowing in any of them. Nothing that would trigger anyone other than that you belong to an organization and they believe race first, that type of thing. Basically, a white Australia policy is what you want, is what your ancestors built in Australia. So I don't see.
Well, yeah, it's just totally political. It's
Right.
just about disagreeing with our ideas. So the problem is, as I said, all these people basically view laws as being weapons against their political opposition, and they think that they've basically been given God's their God's tool for destroying the far right. They're ordained by, the divine to basically shut down whatever they see fit. And we're just getting hammered. Every platform, we're getting taken out. And we get taken out in massive, like, coordinated hits.
Yeah.
So obviously there's some sort of government person who's basically, he collects all of our accounts, sends an email to whatever platform, and then the platform diligently carries out the request, bans us all. And this has happened particularly on Twitter and Telegram. Like, I got banned off Telegram in a way that I didn't even know anyone could get banned off it. Like, my whole account just got completely nuked off the platform. I didn't even know that was possible on Telegram. I thought you just got Apple and Google Play Store banned. But yeah, my account got completely, it's like unheard of. I've never seen anyone have their account taken down other than people that were basically, like engaging in actual criminality, like, I don't know, sharing, child pornography or sharing, actual terrorist instructions and all that kind
Sure.
of stuff. But yeah, my account was obviously just posting these political videos, talking about politics, and not inciting violence or doing anything like that. And it just got nuked without any, explanation. And the same with Twitter. Twitter, I wasn't getting taken down like in the regular way that people get taken down on Twitter. Like, my accounts just get nuked now. There's no warning. I don't get any posts taken down. I just get the whole account gets disabled. And we got taken out in a massive wave of bans, where it took out Tom, took out me, took out Joel, took out Blair, took out Jermaine Roberts, took out lots of our smaller accounts that are associated with the movement. So it is some state actor that's doing it. And this happened right after journalists brought out an article saying that we're thriving on Twitter. So obviously Australian elites read the newspaper and then they go, oh, this is a problem. Let's deal with it.
Yeah, I would imagine someone in the intelligence services probably did it. Just called them up, called, did some backdoor. These are terrorists. You got to get them off your platform. Did you receive anything from Telegram, any type of letter for getting wiped out like that? Any type of letter, text? I know Telegram sometimes is, here it can be linked to a phone number. Did you receive any notification at all, like
Nah,
your account's
no
terminated for this reason?
correspondence. I got no correspondence, just banned, just straight up banned. With Twitter, the only correspondence they give you is your account's been permanently suspended. No explanation of why. And when you appeal, yeah, I've like appealed like each of my bans like 30 times. Like, I just keep clicking it because why not? They never give any explanation. They just say, nah, we were correct. You're banned.
Hmm. Intriguing. I know that the owner of Telegram was arrested in France. You remember that? And the French got a hold of it. They wanted to get control of Telegram, or some intelligence services were rumored they wanted to get control of Telegram. And that's when Telegram started going downhill, I guess, or their ability for this to happen started increasing. other than what you mentioned, child
probably made
pornography.
It worse,
Child
but it's
pornography
always
and
been pretty
terrorism.
bad.
Yeah. All the social media, all the banking structure, the banking infrastructure, like processing credit cards, it's always par for course. It goes in cycles. I don't know what we can really say or not say because they won't give us any guidelines for social media. And it really doesn't even make sense. It seems like some actors are allowed to say whatever they want. And then if one of our guys says the same thing, they immediately get banned.
Well, they obviously do that deliberately so that there's a chilling effect where you basically end up self-censoring and you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to be as safe as possible, as inoffensive as possible. And they basically want you to self-censor, make it seem like you're doing it by your own choice. Because if there was no censorship, everyone would be just speaking like how we do in private. We'd all be saying racial slurs. We'd all be just having fun, making jokes. Like, that's how people actually feel comfortable speaking. And we know that because this is how, like, spaces that aren't policed and censored actually act. Like, you go read the group chat of, any kind of private men's group chat, whether it be, like, a high school group chat or some sort of footy club or something. How do you think they're speaking? Like, they speak even more extreme than we do because they don't feel the scrutiny of the state wanting to lock them up for saying it. Like, this is how people actually feel comfortable saying, and it's what they respond to. And that's why the police actually want to stop it. They want to stop us communicating with people in the way that they actually like to communicate and is more visceral. Because speaking in that way is more visceral. It actually reaches the common person more than talking intellectually. That doesn't mean that we don't need to talk intellectually because we need to reach intellectual people and all the intellectual work that people do is actually very valuable. But at the same time, reaching common people through humor, through speaking bluntly, speaking simply, generalizing and all these kind of things, that's actually really important as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Let me play your last video here I pulled up, so you have to suffer here for the last time. It's only 27 seconds long.
We must not flee from suffering, but embrace it as a price of struggle. Our enemies will not hand over power without a fight, even if we play by their rules. They will try every form of coercion to convince us to give up and return to being slaves. But they forget while hedonism weakens the ability to withstand pain, suffering enhances it. And that the cost we pay now is nothing compared to the reward of securing this continent for our descendants in perpetuity. We must not flee.
How many of these, you put out a few of these a day, it seems like, or one or two a day, right?
No, I put out one a day. So I'm probably on like video, 365 days last year. And then what are we in? Well, it's April 1st now, so probably like 90. Plus 90, so we're probably up to like 440 or something.
You sit down and write these out every day? 30 seconds,
what
you're going to say?
At the start, I was just doing them off the top of my head heuristically. But people didn't like that as much because it took me some time to think through what I was saying. So I was speaking slower. And everyone was accusing me of like basically being retarded because I was obviously reading a teleprompter at that point, but I was speaking slowly, so I looked like a retard. But I actually wasn't. I didn't have a teleprompter. That's why I was speaking slowly. So I was like, okay, whatever. I might as well invest in a teleprompter. So I got a teleprompter, started writing them out. And then now it's flipped. Everyone thinks that I don't use a teleprompter. they don't accuse me of being a retard. So okay. I guess the teleprompter is what people want. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, I probably did the first month was probably videos that were me just speaking heuristically. And if people go back and watch them, there's archives of my videos. You can see that they're a lot slower, not as articulate and all that kind of stuff. But now, yeah, the vast majority of my videos have been written with scripts, which I read from a teleprompter.
I didn't know you had a teleprompter. There you are. You're becoming a professional. They look good, though. The videos look good, and they sound good. And they're always well-scripted. It's It's always a solid message. It's definitely good. I can find no fault in it. I'm surprised, though. Well, I guess it's just, it comes with the package. Because most of it is very, very moderate. Well, I guess in today's time it would be considered radical. But compared to a lot of the stuff online, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty easygoing. Just advice from your Uncle Jacob.
It's not very extreme, but it is radical insofar as it's a whole different way of seeing the world compared to what is in power now. But it's not very extreme. It's not like I'm telling them that they need to get out on the street and start, you know, rioting or hurting people or anything like that. You know, well, that's illegal now, basically. You can go to jail for 7 years for making, even like just joking about that stuff is basically illegal now with this hate speech bill that they put through. Basically, you can be basically making a joke and being reckless insofar as someone could interpret it as not being a joke and want to go out and kill people. So yeah, it's becoming the ever encroaching kind of just laws that are just constantly making more and more things illegal to the point where you basically, if it just goes on for much longer, you're not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah. Especially if you're white, they're making it illegal to be white. Let me read some of these over here, and then I'm going to ask you some stuff about Noticer, and then I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Longview, Jacob and Tim, thanks for your answers and thanks for your efforts in waking people up. Thank you, Longview. If you know what, guys, don't support us, support the guests, support their Give, Send, Go. You can get a hold of them. They always need support. And some of them live stream. Like I know Joel and Tom live stream. You can support them that way as well. Ghost Dog Man, great guests, great conversation. Renunciate, thank you for gifting. You guys can do subs over there on Rumble. I do appreciate it. Ghost Dog Man, again, they don't give universal guidelines because their guidelines are targeted to anything that benefits straight white men, which is illegal, so mums. Guidelines limit the Agent Smith's omnipowers. Yeah. Yeah, they want to be obscure so they can rearrange the rules as they see fit. If they give us rules about what we can or can't say online, we can just game it and just annihilate them that way, so they don't really want to do that. They just want to be able to ban at will. You can't really have hard rules when you do that, other than, well, hate and racisms and anti-Semitism without ever really defining anything. Of course, anti-Semitism has never really been defined other than anything like the ADL hates on that particular day or whatever. But anyways, on to, speaking of propaganda, the Noticer. It seems like the Noticer is where I go to for Australia news. And they're usually doing very fair pieces in regards to your group. Would you agree?
Yes. The Noticer is very good because they basically just, obviously they pick stories that are probably of interest to a right-wing audience, but they also just report things partially. None of the other media obviously do that. Like they're always just caught up in hysterics about us. And obviously putting on experts that basically say a bunch of ridiculous nonsense in regards to us, like Davir Abramovich, who's a Jew that's in charge of the Anti-Defamation Commission here. He's this strange vampire type Jew. And he basically says, oh, we're soon to be terrorists. We need to be prescribed as a terrorist group, despite the fact that we've had nothing to do with terrorism, but also the fact that there hasn't been terrorism in Australia for over 30 years. So from the far right, at least, there's been Muslim terrorism, but you know, from our side, there hasn't been anything.
No, you're the ones getting terrorized, it seems like, either by the police or by Antifa. I see this piece, Australia adds 740,000 new voters in just 3 years. That's a big number. 740,000.
Yeah, it's actually just positively, it's actually insane, because like that's not even just immigration numbers. That's people that have basically been given the right to vote. in 3 years is absolutely insane. And I have to search up how many. Does it say in the article how many voters there are in total?
Australia Electoral Commission revealed last week that there were 710,000 new voters added between 2022 and the end of 2024. And a Monday spokesman told Noticer News that the number of first-time voters was expected to be at least 740,000. The majority are due to age. Other first-time voters are people who've obtained Australian citizenship. I was trying to read through to break it out. Who was voting just, you know, like turned 18 and they can vote, and how many are actually new, you know, aliens like this guy. Crazed African shot by cops was freed from immigration detention by Labor. You know, how many are like that voting for the first time, as opposed to how many are, you know, Australian citizens already? You know, it's kind of hard to break out the number. I can't do that. At first glance, I thought it was like all new immigrants. You know, but it doesn't look like it's, it looks like it's a percentage of people, young Australians that can vote for the first time. I'm going to keep reading it through while you're here. There'll be greater accessibility options that we've ever had. Again, 100,000 staff to deliver it. Okay. More voters on the electoral roll than ever before. Sounds like chaos at election time. Last month, Immigration Minister Tony Burke was accused of vote buying and seat stacking by his political opponents for hosting a series of large-scale citizenship ceremonies in multicultural electorates around Australia. Almost 13,000 immigrants, about 20% of them Indian, were given citizenship within a period of weeks, including 6,000 in just 3 days. Damn. An attendee said the officials from AEC were working the crowd to inform people of their voting rights and responsibilities, and photos showed a large screen encouraging new citizens to enroll to vote. It's basically a scam. They're basically selling out the birthright of Australians to anyone for votes to ensure their power forever.
Yeah. Well, I shared this one on my page, and I said, you know, this is just insane. We need to get rid of the foreigners and the franchise.
Yeah,
because I think we need to get rid of voting for a little while, and maybe we can bring it back in the future, like seriously altered. I think there should be some sort of mechanism for people to be like average people to have a choice in terms of like giving their consent to the government. But the way we have it, one anthropoid, one vote is just insanity.
It's chaos, that's for sure, especially when you get these particular elements in power that want to have open borders and game everything for their power indefinitely at our expense. It's an impossible situation. There's headline on Noticer, though, Gerard Rennick's immigration policy is the best on offer. I've never heard this guy. I never heard of this guy before. Do you know anything about him? This is Labor.
He was previously in the Liberal Party, but I don't know if he left or he got kicked out because he had disagreements with them, and he's founded his own party called, I think it's the People's Party. And he was pretty good in regards to the anti-Semitic terrorist hysteria that was going on, basically paying petty criminals to like engage in anti-Semitic acts of vandalism and terrorism in order to get laws changed. And he was actually against that because he was on, Joel Davis was actually on Twitter space hosting, and they let him speak, and Joel Davis basically explained what was happening, and he actually listened. And then in the he's a senator, or if he's a an MP, but he went into either the parliament or the Senate the next day and was basically saying exactly what Joel was saying, which was obviously the truth. And it has come out now that it was the truth. The police themselves have admitted that it is state actors. They won't say what state it was, but obviously we know what state it was, Israel. that have been doing it. They've been paying cryptocurrency to these criminals to do it so that the laws would get changed, and the laws did get changed.
Yeah, Senator Gerard Rennick's People First Party has launched his policy platform, including its immigration policy. Okay, so he's People First Party. I haven't heard of that before. Are you aware of this? I'm sure you are.
Yes, I'm aware of it. I don't know whether or not it's worth it, but from what I see in that article, I don't think you could go wrong voting for them. We have a we don't have first past the post here. We have preferential voting, so you can vote for the right wing parties. I'd say just vote for whatever right wing micro party you want to, which one you agree with the most. Preference them first. And then preference all the other parties in whatever order you want to. And then I'd say go at the end, go Labor, then Greens, and then Liberals last. I think everyone should put the Liberals last because they are going to, if they get in power, they're going to probably end up crushing the far right as much as they can.
Now, Labor's going to win, though, no doubt in my mind. I mean, seeing early polling and stuff like that, Labor should win, right?
Well, who knows? You know, both the you never really know with an election where both the candidates suck. Like Peter Dutton and Anthony Albanese are both terrible leaders. Both of them are unpopular. So, yeah, you never know. You actually never know. I'm not gonna put. I'm not a betting man in this regard. I don't think I'd bet either side to win against the other.
Okay, so this is up in the air to you guys. You don't know what's going to happen.
Well, only to me. I'm sure some other people have probably analyzed it a bit more than I am and could probably give a more definite answer. But at the same time, I'm independent to elections. I don't really care about these elections. I only care about them insofar as they affect concretely my movement.
Yeah, it could provide opportunity.
That's why I think
though.
People should put Liberals last over and put Labor before Liberals. But you know, like at the same time, like I don't really care if it's a red or the blue party coming in. Like it's not the end of the world if the Liberals come in.
Right. It's just one of them might provide more opportunity for you guys some particular
yeah.
way, some type of asymmetrical angle, that is, as far as some policy concern or something or other, something you can really rally against. It's just one of those thought that occurred in my head. Labor, whatever I saw, Labor looked to be overwhelming, getting these new immigrant votes, getting votes left, right, and center. But at the same time, a lot of people are going to be concerned about immigration. So you don't know what Mr. Gerard Rennick can run off in a particular area of Australia. I don't know how many votes he can siphon off. I appreciate you taking time to come on. Is there anything you want to promote? I have your link on his link on Telegram at the moment is at HerCent, HerCent. Very easy to find on Telegram, at HerCent, HerCent. It's in the link in the description on whiterabbitradio.net. It'll be right underneath this particular program. You can hit the link and pull it up. I appreciate you taking the time to come on and being a good sport and listening to your own voice a couple times, a few times, four times. Is there anything you want to promote?
So you've given the Telegram link. You can also find me on Gab at Jacob Hersant. I haven't been banned off there, so I can use my regular name. Let me find my current Twitter because I get taken off so commonly. So frequently
yeah.
that I always have to have new accounts. On X, I am at Westralian Sun, so Westralianson.
Oh,
so
man.
You can find my videos on there on Twitter. I always like I don't like to post like my new accounts like onto my like Telegram or my bigger platforms, just because like obviously there's some government agency that's looking for the accounts to get them taken down. So I don't like revealing it unless it's like, this is long form content, so I doubt a lot of those people are going to be listening all the way through just to find the one link to the account. So if people want to follow me on Twitter, they can find me there. Otherwise, yeah, those are the main ones, just the Twitter, the Telegram, and the Gab. Those are the most reliable platforms to follow me on.
Probably Gab is the one that you're not going to get banned on. That's one I'm going to have to pull up and follow you on. Jacob Hersant
Yeah.
is just H, just your name all connected on Gab.
Yeah, so yeah, it's just at well, I'll just double check for you because I have so many accounts, it's hard to keep them to remember them, obviously. Yeah, so it's at Jacob Hersant without any space or anything. So obviously JACOBHERSANT.
Yes,
So
I got it here.
yeah, you can
Okay.
find me on there. That's actually my biggest platform now because of just how censored I was. Like, I think the biggest platforms I've had, like other than that, have been like Telegram, Twitter. Like on Telegram, I was like at 9,000. On Twitter, I think I got up to like 9,000 as well before getting banned. And then I can't remember what I was on TikTok, but it was something ridiculous. It was even higher than that. And I was getting heaps of views on TikTok, but
I
yeah,
would
I got banned off
imagine I
TikTok.
would imagine you get heaps of views on TikTok. Your stuff is custom tailored toward these types of social media these days. I mean, they're well done, they're good videos. You got the good background, good camera. Sounds good. Content is original for sure. Most people tuning into TikTok are not going to hear anything like that. Okay, well, we can all follow you on Gab. I'm going to follow you on Gab as soon as we get done here. Because Gab is somewhere where you're not going to get banned. I've never been banned on Gab, and that's about the only platform. I could say I haven't been shut down. So there you go. So I appreciate you coming on and being a good sport. We look forward to seeing what you have to say in the future and hopefully having you back on in the future. Stay safe over there, okay?
I'll be happy to come on again. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And thank you for everything you do. Blood and honor.
Cheers. And I appreciate you guys showing up and supporting the show. Please support Jacob, support his group over there in Australia. Links are in the description. And I'll be back Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. On Friday, we have Emily Yukas. You guys make sure to check that out. Cheers, guys. Have a good night.